Welcome to the Age Proof podcast, where we explore the science of longevity, performance, and health optimization. Through expert interviews and deep dives into the latest research, we bring you practical, evidence-based strategies to enhance health span and resilience. Serious conversations for those who take longevity seriously.
Okay, welcome Martha Carlin. Lovely to have you on the Age Proof podcast today, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to the conversation.
So, just give a little introduction to Martha. If there's a thread running through the most inspiring breakthroughs in health, it's this. Someone refused to accept the standard story. For Martha Carlin, that moment came when her husband was diagnosed with Parkinson's at a young age. And the experience didn't just change her life, it reshaped her entire way of thinking. What if a chronic illness wasn't just a breakdown in one part of the body, but a collapse of the entire system? A former business strategist with a gift for solving complex problems, Martha brought a systems thinking lens to something most of us are never taught to question, the foundations of health. She taught herself microbiology, biochemistry, even soil biology, piecing together a bigger picture of how the body really works and how it begins to fail. And what she discovered was nothing short of transformative. The gut microbiome isn't about just digestion, but it's central to metabolism, immunity, brain health, and the process of aging. Her journey led her to found Biotic Quest, to launch a groundbreaking formula called Sugar Shift, and to become one of the most original voices in the health optimization movement. So Martha, welcome again. And I'd love to start here. This wasn't an academic project with you, it was personal. What gave you the conviction to go so deep into the science yourself, and what did those early steps look like?
Well, I think it goes back to my training. So my original training in school was as an accountant, which is a system that has to balance. And I came out of school and was trained as an auditor, which teaches you don't take anything at face value that someone tells you. You have to examine the evidence for yourself. And then I was taught a process of how to look at business to identify business risk. And that was called transaction flow review, which is where you map out everything that's flowing through the business, who touches it, and you're looking for the breakpoints by asking questions and interviewing those people who are part of that system. And so when John was diagnosed with Parkinson's, my background was in business operations and business turnarounds. I had done a lot of turnaround work and rapid growth work where I used that process of thinking. And I looked at what the doctor was saying about Parkinson's, and I was like, well, this seems like a systems problem. I think I can apply the methodologies that I've learned to understanding the human body. And I just started with food because that's the main thing flowing through the system, and gradually over 23 years picked up many different aspects of the science and started putting all the pieces together in a systems-based approach because that's how I was trained. And so it didn't seem like such a monumental task when I started out, but when I look back at all the things I've learned, it's like, wow, that's a lot of science.
Well, particularly because, you know, now anyone can be a citizen scientist with ChatGPT on their side. But when you were starting this, I mean, the internet was kind of in its early days. And so, you know, the level of research required was infinitely deeper and more difficult, probably, than what we have available now. I mean,
and more expensive, because I spent a lot of money buying books. So I have a pretty extensive library, but I was fortunate in that I had a friend who was a college librarian, and I made friends with a number of scientists where I was able to get publications that were typically behind a paywall. And so I sort of built my own private database of about, I don't know, 9 or 10,000 papers, a lot of them public access, but not all of them. And so, you know, I have this huge database of all the different pieces and areas that I've studied, because I would get interested in, say, mitochondria or iron metabolism or, you know, a different microbe. And I would just go very, very deep down into the published research about it and collect all my papers and make a folder. You know, sometimes I have to go back and revisit those because I can't hold it all up here all the time in the brain.
So I love the idea of systems thinking. And can you explain how, I mean, when did you start to connect the idea that the systems failure was connected to the microbiome?
Well, so over the years, every time I would meet somebody with Parkinson's, I sort of interview them for their life story. And I had recognized a pattern with a number of people with Parkinson's related to antibiotics. So they had either had a history of taking antibiotics for strep infections as a child repeatedly, or they had had acne in their teens and taken long-term courses of antibiotics. And I read a book called Missing Microbes by Dr. Martin Blaser in 2014. And he was talking about the rise of chronic disease in the era of people who had grown up in the era of antibiotics. And that was like, oh, what? And he wasn't talking about Parkinson's, but he was talking about all these other chronic diseases. And it really resonated for me. And so I'm like, what is this microbiome? And I met actually a fermentation chemist named Steve Cosimi shortly after that. And he was looking for investors for his animal probiotics company to get antibiotics out of the food supply of animals. And I thought, well, I'll invest a little bit in his company and I'll start to learn about the microbes. And so he started teaching me. And about 6 months later, the first paper was published that showed that they could separate. So in Parkinson's, there's two different phenotypes, if you will. Most people are familiar with the tremor. But there's also a phenotype called posture and gait. And in that symptom profile, there's more bent over, like a penguin stance. And they have shuffling feet or freezing feet. So it's a very different profile. And Dr. Schepperhans was able to show that he could separate those two types just by the bacteria in their gut. And I was like, okay, Eureka, that is it. This microbiome is like the general ledger from accounting. And I quit what I was doing and just started deep diving into what is this microbiome. Started funding some research at the University of Chicago, where I met one of my co-founders of the BioCollective, Dr. Jack Gilbert. And then was introduced to Dr. Suzanne Vernon, who was also looking at the microbiome and had been at the CDC for about 17 years. And we were like, I think there's commonality across diseases. Suzanne had been studying chronic fatigue. Jack had been looking at autism and a number of other things because he had a child with autism. And so we came up with this concept of building out a poop bank, basically, to start to study this microbiome. And I think, you know, one of the things that helped me maybe not be so intimidated by it is it was such a new field. There were so few people who really even understood the complexity of the microbiome and what the potential was back then. It's like I was learning at the same pace or maybe faster even than some of the people who were actually in that field because they were very focused on a singular thing. You know, I was looking at the bigger picture. So, you know, I was able to kind of keep up with the pace of what was going on because I had 10 years prior experience of teaching myself science.
Yes, and I was going to say, I mean, the fact that you weren't constrained by academic silos seems to be one of your superpowers because you've been able to basically connect different disciplines in a way that those who were focusing on one specific thing just simply weren't able or interested in doing.
Yes, and I have a meeting I'm working on with another nonprofit called Resolve Parkinson's this coming May, where we're bringing in scientists from a number of different disciplines. Some of them have never looked at Parkinson's, but there are these dots that I've connected over time and relationships that I've developed with people in redox biology or Dr. Ninham in Australia, who's a physical chemist, a colloidal chemist. He works with nanobubbles and all this really kind of groundbreaking work with the glycocalyx. And I'm bringing that with my microbiome scientists that I've had relationships with for about 10 years. And we're bringing these pieces together of people outside the field to really kind of take a step back and say, okay, we haven't made any progress in Parkinson's really in 100 years. So let's look at the system and start to think about all these intervention points that we can do something early on in the process and make for a much better quality of life, much better outcome, and maybe come up with a diagnosis that can turn people back from ever getting Parkinson's.
That sounds phenomenal, and hopefully AI will only accelerate that process. So to go back to, as this was emerging, I mean, how did you get to the point where you decided to form the BioCollective and later BioTeQuest? Was it simply that, you know, none of the tools or products that were around were addressing the functional losses you were seeing?
I mean, truly, the BioCollective was a crazy jump into the void because there was really nothing out there. And we knew that what was needed was this large-scale research, and that needed quality samples. So that idea just came from trying to fill a need that we knew for the science to advance, somebody needed to do it. And so we started to do that. On the product side, that was, I mean, there was a little evolution to it because out of the samples, we started building a bank of microbes that we felt like were important. And we were doing that out of our samples, but also out of food and the environment. And then it was a bit accidental coming up with the idea for making our own probiotic because I went to a Parkinson's conference and they were showing that the sugar alcohol mannitol, which is often used as a sugar substitute with diabetics, but mannitol could stop the aggregation of the proteins in an animal model, in a mouse, and could also pull those aggregates out of the brain and clear them. And I was like, wow. So I came back from that meeting and remember Steve Cosimi, the fermentation chemist who was working on the dog side. I sat down with Steve and I said, well, first I bought this little mannitol chemistry book. And I started reading it and there was a chapter in there about the microbes that produce mannitol. They ferment it from other sugars. And so then I went to Steve and I was like, could we put a little factory back in the gut that converts the sugars that we already get too much of in our diet into mannitol? And so we would kind of restore this function to our body that would help with the cleanup. And so we just worked together and made this little prototype for John to try. And he had some pretty remarkable results. And we were measuring his microbiome along the way and could see it moving back to the healthy human microbiome profile. And so then we just kind of were like, well, let's like, we can just put it over here on our poop website and sell it as a sideline. And then we started getting more feedback from people. And then in, I guess, 2020, when COVID really was kind of starting into its peak, we decided that we didn't want to collect viable fecal samples anymore, that was a danger to the people in our lab. So we shut down that part of the business and actually moved into working on our probiotics, and we expanded from the sugar shift formula that I had made for John into, you know, a much broader. So we worked on about 24 different formulas with Dr. Raul Cano, who's my chief scientific officer. And right now we have 5 of those in the market and we have one more coming forward, but we used, you know, his deep knowledge of microbes, our database of microbes that we had built out, and computational modeling. We built something called a BioFlux model where we could design teams of microbes that work together, which is actually how they work in the environment. You know, if you have a healthy ecosystem, they're all kind of working together, balancing things out, and the waste of one microbe is used as the fuel of another microbe. And so that's how a fermented food works also. So, you know, that's the concept that we put into place. And there really, I don't think there's anybody else on the market yet who's really adopted that concept.
So it's missing functions as opposed to missing single bacteria.
Right, right. So we're looking at the genetics of the bacteria and how they interact together to form a function and actually produce what you're currently not producing very well in your gut. So, you know, we have the sugar shift that kind of changes sugar metabolism overall. And then, you know, as another example, we have a sleep product that the team of microbes produce bacterial melatonin and tryptophan so that, you know, you're producing that in your gut for about 7 hours and it's helping you with your sleep naturally.
So with the sugar shift, you read this paper on mannitol, and then you just decided to basically put it into practice immediately on John. I mean, that's the amazing thing about, your way of doing things as opposed to, let's say, a clinical trial. You're looking at years of, you're literally like, right, let's do it right now. Within a few weeks or months, you're putting it into action. I mean, what kind of results were you seeing based on that early formula?
I've always been kind of a person of action. Time is not your friend, particularly with something like Parkinson's. But so at the time, John had been under a fair amount of stress and he was having trouble walking. So he couldn't navigate through a crowd at all. And he was walking with a cane. He needed a cane to walk. And within a week of taking the product, we could see improvement. A month later, he was no longer walking with the cane. And so we started that around the end of December that year. And in May, we went to our daughter's college graduation. And, it was a crowded audience of people, thousands of people. And he was able to just navigate through seamlessly. And he would not have been able to do that before that. And he also, there's something called the UPDR score, which is how they score your Parkinson's progression. And the higher the number, the more advanced your Parkinson's is. So the year before he started taking the probiotic, his UPDR score was at 35. And after a year of taking the probiotic, his UPDR score had dropped to a 20.
I mean,
And
that is incredible.
it stayed at a 20 for about 4 years, until he had COVID at the end of 2021.
Gosh, I mean, have there been other interventions in the Parkinson's field that have had that kind of a radical effect that you know of?
Not that I know of. Well, what I will say is I do know of somebody in the United Kingdom, actually, that I interviewed for my documentary. He was in a wheelchair. So his Parkinson's had advanced to a point, they called it stage 5 Parkinson's. And his wife is a homeopath. And they actually got very focused on healing his gut. And they did a number of different things to do that. But one of the things they did was a goat milk kefir. I think it might be called Laughing Goat in the UK.
Yes, I know that brand.
So he started taking the Laughing Goat, and they had some homeopathic targets for specific problems in the gut bacteria. And I think they may have taken a product called HU58 that is from Microbiome Labs. And I have to double check with him. I think they might have also taken Sugar Shift. But they did a number of things also with his diet and nutrition. And he's now reversed all the way back to what his doctor says is stage 1 Parkinson's. And I had the most delightful interview with the two of them, but he was a little off because he had eaten something that interfered with his medication. And so I interviewed him a week later when he hadn't eaten the interfering type food, and he played the ukulele for me, and his fingers were moving so fast I couldn't even see them on screen. And that is really rare for somebody with Parkinson's to be able, fine motor skills are one of the early things that's really affected. That was pretty amazing. So yes, there are people, and there are there's another, I can't remember the woman's name, but there's a woman who has reversed her Parkinson's with Qigong, which is a energy practice, and there's a gentleman by the name of Howard Schiffke, who also reversed his Parkinson's with a Qigong practice and some other things he's doing. And
That's
forget the
interesting.
guy's name. There's another guy who he just passed away in his 90s, but he reversed most of his Parkinson's symptoms by he developed a fast walking protocol. So there's a number of different and unique approaches that people are taking that involve nutrition, alternative approaches, addressing the gut, addressing stress and energy. Stress is a huge underlying factor in Parkinson's.
Is it?
Yeah, so there are things that can be done, and I think that's the message that often gets lost at the doctor's appointment because they don't tell you that stuff. And, you know, neurologists aren't trained in nutrition and understanding that sort of thing. So there's some doctors in the States, Lori Mishley, who has developed a protocol, dietary, you know, a lot of nutritional support. And I think she has something called the Parkinson's School that you can go through her Parkinson's School and learn about all of that. And there's Dr. Terry Walls, who reversed her MS with a Yeah. And we followed her diet quite a bit, as much as, you know.
The microbiome is probably the most measurable element of all of the different protocols you've just described, all end up affecting the microbiome in some form. And so when you sort of assembled the microbial team in SugarShift, how did you kind of bring that together, and how did you know they'd work together and not compete?
Well, when we first made that, we didn't have our computational model, so we didn't know for sure, but we knew who some of the mannitol producers were. So we selected those, and we knew one of them was a pH modulator. And then we chose some others out of fermented foods that already kind of work as teams, including a microbe that's typically out of fermented meats, so Pediococcus acetolactici, because we thought, well, maybe that would deal with some of the proteins. So we kind of had this general idea of what we wanted. And when I was talking to Steve, he had relationships with people in the industry from being in the probiotics industry for many years. And so he was able to get samples to start out with for us to try. And he was having trouble finding one of the microbes. And he's like, you know, do I really need to have this one? And I was like, intuitively, Steve, I just feel like it's got to be there. It's got to be there. And he's like, okay. So he ended up finding it. And, you know, fast forward a year later, we had our computational model and we put it through the model, and it, you know, the model predicted everything that we had kind of seen in the before and after work with John, which was very exciting. But then we ran the model and took out the microbe that Steve thought he wasn't going to be able to find. And that was one of the pH modulators. And it's a soil microbe. It, you know, it didn't have the same function. It didn't produce the butyrate that feeds the gut lining at the same level. Now, there were just a lot of things that were different about it when you pulled that one out of the equation. And it's also often in fermented foods. So, you know, it was intuitive initially, but then we used that model to prove it out. And then once we knew that the model worked, we used that to build all of our other formulas.
I saw an interview with you where you said that SugarShift acts as a kind of metabolic factory for 12 hours. What does that actually look like in terms of kind of metabolites and gene expression and shifting microbial balance? You know, let's say once you take a dose of this.
So, you know, it's starting to convert those sugars in the small intestine, that's where we are having a lot of issues with people today, where colonic bacteria can come up and colonize the small bowel and basically steal your nutrients and kind of wreak havoc. But so in that process of converting sugars, one thing that it does, there's an enzyme called glucose 6-phosphate. Some people have glucose 6-phosphate deficiency, and part of the restoration process, I think, is in putting that enzyme back to work and how that kind of flows through the system. One of the other sort of interesting things about it, because people report improved energy, is that in this cycle of producing the mannitol, so it's converting fructose and glucose into mannitol, but if, you know, the brain or the red blood cells need glucose, it can actually reverse that cycle and produce the glucose that's needed by the brain or the red blood cells. So it's got this kind of balancing effect. But one of the drivers is it is increasing the production of butyrate, and butyrate and also supporting the growth through the mannitol, which is a prebiotic. It supports the growth of more of the butyrate producing bacteria in the gut. And it also works like a fermented food in terms of making the gut anaerobic again, and the gut is supposed to be anaerobic. So when you do that, then you make the environment better for microbes like bifidobacteria. So we see an increase in bifidobacteria, which is very important on so many fronts and for brain health and the immune system and all of that. And so you're increasing the bifidobacteria and feeding also a microbe like Akkermansia that is also anaerobic, and restoring things like Roseburia, which is a carbohydrate metabolizing microbe that's what's called a keystone species. So there's a lot of little pieces to the puzzle, but it's, you know, it's managing electron flow, if you will, so energy and delivering electrons in that process. So it's really a pretty amazing system, and we can see in our computational modeling sort of where they start out and what their growth curve trajectory as a team is. And then you can look at different metabolites and how they're cross-feeding each other, whether that's hydrogen or butyrate or acetaldehyde, oxygen, any of those. So, I mean, there's literally thousands and thousands of metabolites that you can look at. But, you know, we looked at some of those drivers that are behind energy production and keeping the gut anaerobic. And then in our clinical trial, our results actually showed that by shifting the gut back to that anaerobic environment and pulling the sugar out, we've actually change the terrain so that the gram-negative bacteria that produce lipopolysaccharide endotoxins that are highly inflammatory, that population drops, the endotoxin drops in the blood, and the signs of the endotoxin-producing genes drop in the microbiome as well.
And that was in your clinical trial. That I think I saw that you'd actually done a clinical trial, which was pretty exciting.
Yes, it was very exciting. And we were, and I wanted to look at endotoxin. Our trial was done in a diabetes cohort, but Parkinson's is a very difficult to do a clinical trial because there aren't like standard blood markers or biomarkers or things that you could call an endpoint. There's an endotoxin model of Parkinson's, and there, and endotoxin is also implicated in diabetes, and it's implicated in depression and a number of other inflammatory. And so I thought, okay, well, as a part of our clinical trial, let's measure serum endotoxin and endotoxin in the microbiome and see if we are shifting that, because that would have implications across really any inflammatory issue that is driven by endotoxin.
I mean, it seems to me that one of your pioneering elements is the way you've established the multifunctional aspects of these microbes, that they're engineers, sensors, and even communicators. And it sounds to me like, you know, BioFlux, your company, was one of the first organizations to really map out this and particularly start to move that towards designing targeted formulas. And it feels like that's really shaped the direction of the whole industry. How do you think that is going to affect the way we design targeted formulas going forward?
Well, I mean, I'd like to see more people doing it. I don't see people doing it right now. Most formulas on the market are designed either for what's easily available and most cost effective to put into it. There are some people who are, you know, putting together more of a team, but very, very few. And, you know, I don't see people using the modeling. And that's, I think, in large part because many of the products that are already on the market, people don't want to go back and reformulate, or they don't want to really know if it's not that effective. So when we originally developed the BioFlux model, we offered it as a consulting product, offering for other companies if they wanted us to run their products. And we did run some of the bigger industry names. And, you know, frankly, they didn't really want to know what the result was. You know, and if you've got a product on the market that you've been selling for a long time and the results come back and it's like, but people are still buying it and your marketing's working, you know, people don't want to, I mean, it's a pretty expensive process to go back and reformulate and communicate with your customers why you're changing and all of that. And so we just didn't find there was receptivity in the wider market for that as a service. But I think as the market starts to mature, you might see more of that.
As a keen gardener, I was delighted to see your Yield and Shield product, which is effectively a biotic soil enhancer. I mean, do you see some of these microbial deficiencies, aside from antibiotic use, do you see it with its origins in modern farming and how we're starting to lose some of these key bacterial strains in the vegetables and soil?
That's a huge, huge part of it. And so actually, the idea for Yield and Shield, which is we have a sister company called Ancient Organics that my chief scientific officer, Raul, and one of his former partners, Robin Steele, founded with a bank of microbes that they had worked on a decade earlier that came out of ancient amber occlusions and deep sea cores. In working through the formulas with Raul, I said, you know, if we don't address what's going on in farming and agriculture, we're just kind of pushing a string up a hill because, you know, we've lost these microbes at that point, and they are what makes our food nutrient dense or not, protects our food from pathogens or not, kind of the same as what's going on in our body. And so we started to work on the Yield and Shield formula, which under that company, Ancient Organics, is actually sold at larger volumes for the farming industry under the name Paleo Power. And we've done about 6 years worth of research in different crops, looking at yield, nutritional content, the soil microbiome, respiration of the soil, and all these kind of different pieces of the puzzle, and the breakdown of glyphosate, which was a key focus of mine all the way back to the beginning. And so we have some great results on how it improves yield, because most people don't want to pay for bioremediation.
Yes.
At least on large-scale farming, they will pay for yield. And we've demonstrated, basically, we can increase yield while you get the cleanup for free.
Amazing.
And you get more nutrients in the food. So we have some new studies we're actually doing with some products. We have a product we're working on for coffee, dealing with the molds in the coffee that people are finding.
I mean, I absolutely love this because, you know, until recently, I didn't understand that just as microbiomes are the way we bring nutrients from the food, the soil itself does that for the vegetables. And so if you're buying, you know, organic from your supermarket, but everything that is coming from dead soil, you know, you might as well, you know, invest a little bit more and get it from a biodynamic farm or somewhere where they're actually working on their soil as a foundational element. And I feel like what you've done now is you've taken it to this foundational level. And if we can get to the stage where we're targeting right at the origin, we could even get it perhaps within a generation to the point where disease can be targeted at the level of soil treatment. Now that is an incredible thought. So I love that product. And are you finding people are interested in that and investing in it?
Yes. And, you know, people love it. Actually, my designer, when we first brought it to market a couple of years ago, she had this sort of rock garden area that she said, I've never really been able to grow anything in this rock garden area that I'm supposed to grow. And she took these pictures of the year before, kind of what it looked like. And then she used the Yield and Shield, and it just had just these beautiful flowers everywhere. And she said, I'm so amazed. And, you know, I've had some local farm, I live on a farm, but, you know, some of our local farmer friends, I've given them samples to try, and they come back and they're like, oh, like all of my vegetables are, you know, the color's brighter, they're bigger, they're more robust, they don't get attacked by the fusarium wilt, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Amazing.
So, yeah, it's pretty amazing.
So I understand.
And really, Raul, all the credit to Raul for his deep knowledge of the soil microbes and all the work he did over his 35 years at Cal Poly as a microbial ecologist before anybody had ever even really heard of the term microbial ecology.
Yes, absolutely amazing. And I understand that Sugar Shift, which is your gut microbiome probiotic that you've got, and also you have it as a yogurt starter. And there's some links between it being able to break down glyphosate. Could you expand on that a little?
Sure. So one of the things as we were building our bank of microbes, we were looking for, so glyphosate is particularly detrimental to bifidobacteria and lactobacillus. And those are really our friendly bacteria that help produce vitamins and kind of maintain the ecosystem. And they're particularly sensitive to glyphosate. And so we were looking for, could we find a microbe that we could bring to market that was resistant to glyphosate. And we actually found our Lactobacillus plantarum that's in all of our formulas from fermented elderberries. I think the elderberries were in my neighborhood. I actually collected the elderberries off a tree. And of course, in all of our neighborhoods here in America, people are spraying Roundup on their weeds and all of that. So we found a strain that was not only resistant to glyphosate, because there are microbes that can break it down, but they don't break it all the way down, and they break it down into something more toxic called AMPA. And what this microbe, the beauty of this plantarum, is that it breaks it all the way down. And so it breaks down the AMPA too. And so you're kind of getting all the way back to the elemental level. And we think that is potentially one of the...
That could be. Could that not be, I mean, a Nobel Prize winning invention? And could you not...
Well,
could you not,
I don't, you know, about... I don't,
could, but, you not spray that airily onto... You know, given that it's in, what, 80% of everyone's, you know, drinking water, or red recently or something. I mean, could that not then start to be applied at massive levels to reduce it from the soil?
Well, you know, we would like to see that. And that's why on the ag side, you know, we've also talked to people about water and, you know, how it might help in water. But yeah, so that, you know, that was actually kind of one of our most exciting discoveries, that plantarum and its ability to break down glyphosate. And then our Leuconostoc mesenteroides, which we use in a lot of our formulas, which is also frequently found in fermented foods. And that came from cabbage I had grown in my little organic garden. And both of those are resistant to glyphosate. And the Leuconostoc is actually the one that kind of sets up the system to make it anaerobic, which is what it does in a sauerkraut fermentation too. It's the one that comes in first, it grows and pulls the oxygen out, and then you have an anaerobic environment that sets up the space for the lactobacillus to come in and do its job.
That's absolutely fascinating. So I just wanted to kind of pull it into the longevity space directly, because this podcast focused quite a lot on aging. So what are the most important microbial functions or signatures that you see in healthy aging versus early decline?
So we actually, in our sample collection early on, we had this, okay, we need to find some healthy centenarians. We collected samples from about a half a dozen people who were over 100, who were, you know, still in pretty good shape, and studied their microbiome and actually isolated bifidobacteria from them. So kind of back to this importance of bifidobacteria. Bifidobacteria, we are colonized as babies, and we've lost a lot of that. So there's a Bifido infantis that you can still find in indigenous populations around the world. But, you know, in Western society, where a lot of the last couple of generations have not been breastfed, they're not colonized with that Bifido infantis. But these bifidobacteria and the diversity of bifidobacteria in the healthy centenarians was kind of a big aha. And we actually have a set of those bifidobacteria that we've isolated, but we have not brought to market yet. But that's somewhere down the line. We'd like to bring those bifidobacteria to the market. And there's also an interesting kind of little tidbit connection to so Parkinson's has lower bifidobacteria. People who had poor outcomes in COVID have lower bifidobacteria. And there's some research showing that the COVID virus itself specifically targets bifidobacteria, whether you have a wild type infection or you have the vaccine, that spike protein actually targets the bifidobacteria and specifically kills it. And bifidobacteria are also really interesting from a light perspective because they fluoresce.
Interesting.
And, you know, we don't have enough time to get into light, but light is a very important piece of the puzzle. And so when you're losing kind of those light factories, I think that's also very important. And the bifidobacteria produce something called plasmologens. And there's a Dr. Dan Goodnow.
Yeah, I just heard a podcast with him and my jaw was on the ground. I really was. Such an amazing invention.
So he's doing some great work, but I think there's still an underappreciation for the fact that bifidobacteria produce plasmolygens. So if you have a healthy microbiome with healthy bifidobacteria, then you're going to be producing a healthier amount of plasmolygens. And that was actually something also that we saw in our clinical trial, was that the sugar shift formula increased the presence of bifidobacteria, the relative abundance of bifidobacteria in the gut over the course of the 90 days.
So would that sugar shift formula be really for anyone to take? It's not just for people dealing with Parkinson's. That's a kind of generalized, useful strain.
It's a very generalized metabolic formula that really just supports healthy metabolism.
And when someone takes this, obviously in the short term, there's an obvious increase if you take a sample, but is that maintained if you stop taking it?
That I don't know, because I haven't done a follow-up of, people who've been off of it, and people ask me, I think you can restore your microbe. You can restore your microbiome and support your terrain through a healthy lifestyle and a healthy diet. Where I think the problem is for society at large today is the exposure to these chemicals. And it's not just glyphosate. I mean, I talk a lot about glyphosate, but there's a lot of chemicals and chemical toxin load in the food supply. And so in our clinical trial, one of the things we also found was an increase in two different gene sets that are involved in detoxification. And one of them, the genes increased over 900% and the other one over 650%. So you're getting a significant improvement in detoxification. Can that hold up under the toxic load? I don't know. It'd be a great study to do, but those studies are kind of expensive. And it's pretty difficult to do a study around that in humans. We've been looking at how to study the glyphosate, but the exposure from day to day, depending on what you eat, can be quite dramatic. And so there's a company called HRI here in the States that does the glyphosate testing, and the founder of that company tests himself quite frequently. I heard him talking about going out to dinner one night and eating pasta, and then his sample the next day being just off the charts. And
with one meal,
that's somebody who's very focused on it. So it's very difficult to find a group of people where you would have a standard diet that you would know. I mean, you could probably do something maybe in an animal model but I think the animal model studies are also maybe a bit suspect, because most of the mouse chow is coming from GMO sources. So those mice are exposed to glyphosate. And so that's going to have some impact on the results of the study, and you don't know how much. So we have had some discussions with some potential to try to do a study in cane workers, because they're exposed to a lot of glyphosate. So you might have a better idea of what the exposure levels are and be able to do a controlled study to see what the benefits are for people who are exposed in the
farming. I'll look out for that. I mean, that will be absolutely fascinating if it starts to show that you can really address the levels there. So I just wanted to kind of finish by talking about some of these amazing products you've got other than the Yield and Shield. And I'll list the links to your sites in the show notes. So you've got a sleep product and the sugar shift. And what are the other kind of core products? I noticed you've got some incoming as well that haven't been launched yet.
So Ideal Immunity is actually one of our unsung heroes, I'll say. And it has a strain called Lactobacillus ruminans in it that was isolated from a healthy human gut. And there's some interesting research coming out on some other Lactobacillus ruminans strains and how it is effective for the immune system. What we found in our research is very effective against a number of foodborne pathogens. And so, we often recommend that people take that if they're going on foreign travel or that sort of thing, or if they've had food poisoning. If you start feeling icky after food, you've eaten some food and you take a couple of those capsules, boom. But recently I've actually saved a couple of people's pets with that product. One of the pets had sepsis, and the doctor had basically said, you know, she's drowning in her own fluid, and, you know, if we can't fix her gut in the next 48 hours, I mean, she's going to be dead. And she started taking the Ideal Immunity, and 24 hours later, she was like a new dog.
That is amazing.
And I, you know, had another person's pet who was in kidney failure, and the doctor said, you know, maybe a couple of weeks, started taking the product and lived for another year and a half. So I think that's a unsung hero. And I'm actually talking to Raul about what kind of a clinical trial we could do with that one. We have antibiotic antidote, and our antibiotic antidote also contains that Lactobacillus ruminans strain in it. The antibiotic antidote is for people who have taken antibiotics recently, or if they had a long-term course of antibiotics or a lot of antibiotic exposure over time. And we've had some really great feedback from people who were had to do IV antibiotics for 30, 60 days and kind of wiped everything out, really had digestive issues after that. And the doctor was like, you know, that's just normal. You know, started taking the antibiotic antidote and everything kind of returned back to normal. And then we have our heart-centered product, which is for supporting cardiovascular health and the production of nitric oxide. And that's kind of an unsung hero. We do have a group of alternative healthcare practitioners who have used that with long COVID and try to help people with that. And I've had some other people who've used the Sugar Shift product with long COVID.
Perfect and then Peace looks very appealing. I like the sound of that.
So we've had Perfect Peace on the slate for a while, and we're small, so we're like, okay, when, you know, when do we have the time to bring a new product to market? And we just kind of decided in the current chaos of the world and the stress people are under, now would be a perfect time to bring Perfect Peace forward. And so I think we're about 60 days away from that, but that's, you know, the gut-brain connection and all those neurotransmitters that are made in the gut that can be calming and soothing and really helping to support our overall wellness and a feeling of calm, which is kind of hard to maintain these days.
Do you test these products yourself, Martha?
I do. I do test them myself. You know, it's interesting because I have people like, I sleep really well, so I don't notice a difference with simple slumber. But, I, you know, people who have sleep problems, you know, swear, we have customers who just are like, it's turned their life around. I frequently take, well, I take Sugar Shift every day, and then I alternate sometimes heart-centered and Ideal Immunity. So, and I'm sure I'll be trying Perfect Peace when we have that.
Me too. And you ship to the UK, no problem. Just to check.
We do ship to the UK. One thing I will warn people with all this crazy tariff stuff is it's really unclear what that's going to look like with all the tariff stuff in place. But we ship to Canada and the UK, and we have a distributor in Australia. And so that's the places where we've typically been able to deal with the customs issues and not have a lot of problems. Shipping can be expensive, and we tried Europe, but there's so many different regulations and things around the European market and the customs in each of the different countries. We just kept having product get hung up there for months, and that doesn't help either party. So we pulled out of all the countries except for the UK, Australia, and Canada.
Fortunate for us. Listen, thank you so much, Martha. I really do feel like you've done some unbelievable work, and it's just absolutely extraordinary how you've transformed this industry, and I really look forward to seeing what else you do as these companies grow and emerge further. So thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed the conversation. It was fun.
Wonderful. Well, I hope to have you back another time, and in the meantime, take care.
Love to. Have to upload. I think I can hang up.
The Ageproof podcast and its guests share personal experiences and opinions only. Nothing discussed should be taken as medical or professional advice. Always consult with a qualified healthcare provider for personalized guidance. The views expressed are solely those of each speaker. If you find our podcast helpful, please like, share, and subscribe. Your support helps us grow.